Hello, students. Today we're talking about the Civil War in two parts. We will first examine the immediate causes of the Civil War, and then we will talk about the war to its middle in July of 1863. As we talked about in class, some of the immediate causes of the Civil War were the rise of slavery, the issues of sectionalism between the country, North and South, and also the different economies that the North and South had. The decade of the 1850s was a very challenging decade. The country was growing, it was expanding west, it fought a war with Mexico, which added extra territory, and the big question was going to be, were those territories going to be able to be free, or were they going to be slave? In 1849, following the Mexican War, David Wilmot, a politician from up north, issued a proviso. The proviso stated that there would be no more slavery in the Western territories. It was voted on 99 times, but it never passed. Obviously, it was blocked by the South. And then as we roll into the decade of the 1850s, in 1850 itself, there was a new compromise. Henry Clay, the great compromiser, had, along with Daniel Webster and John C. Calhoun, had put a compromise in place. And remember that during a compromise, nobody gets everything that they want. And so in the compromise of 1850, California was to be a free state. Texas was to be a slave state. And one of the most controversial things about the compromise was the addition of a new fugitive slave law. This required people to return escaped slaves. Obviously, a law like that and the question of slavery itself led to the rise of more abolitionists in America, fueled by the publication in 1831 of The Liberator, William Lloyd Garrison's newspaper. Abolitionism had been a hot topic. The next thing that fueled abolitionism was in 1852, the publication of Uncle Tom's Cabin by a woman by the name of Harriet Beecher Stowe. Even though she lived in Maine, she really gathered the essence of the evils of slavery in her book. And again, this led to the rise of the abolitionist movement. In 1854, there was something called the Kansas-Nebraska Act, principally led by the little giant of a politician from Illinois, Stephen Douglas, who based his act on popular sovereignty, that the people in the territories have the right to decide for themselves about whether or not to have slavery. This led to an event called Bleeding Kansas in 1855, where pro-slavers and anti-slavers battled in the streets in places like Lawrence, Kansas, for the soul of the Kansas Territory. And really, it was the beginning of the Civil War. In 1857, there was a major economic depression. Southerners could look at Northerners and blame them, blame the banking system, blame the big industries, okay? And this even more led to the conflict of the Civil War. Another thing that year was the Dred Scott case. Dred Scott was a slave. He ended up in free territory. All he wanted to do was get married, and the case goes to the Supreme Court. And basically, Roger Taney, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, said that slaves are property, and slaves have no rights that a white man is bound to respect. Again, this was something that advanced the sectional crisis, the Panic of 1857 and the Dred Scott case. In those years, 1856-57, you had the rise of the Republican Party. The Republican Party did not want to see slavery expand west. And even though Abraham Lincoln was not the first candidate for the Republican Party, he exemplified republicanism, that slavery where it was really couldn't be touched, but the expansion of slavery west was not a good thing at all. And so Republicans bound together to stop the expansion of slavery. In 1858, Abraham Lincoln really made his case. in the debates for the Illinois Senate against that little giant, Stephen Douglas. Abraham Lincoln's nickname was the rail splitter. He was a frontiersman. He was a mailman. He was a store clerk. He was a frontier lawyer. But he had one of the greatest minds of any person ever in American history. In those 7 open-air debates, which are still reenacted today, Abraham Lincoln made his case that slavery was a moral wrong. Stephen Douglas made his case for popular sovereignty. The debates themselves changed journalism because Abraham Lincoln would get up and he would speak for an hour and a half. And so if you wanted to cover the debates, you had to develop some kind of shorthand to cover the essence of what Lincoln and Douglas were saying. After Lincoln spoke, Douglas would get up and rebuff Lincoln for another hour and a half. And then as journalists, you would have to go over to the local telegraph office and take your shorthand and cover the story. Even though Lincoln loses the debates for the Illinois Senate, even though he loses the Senate seat, it's really a win for him because people get to hear his ideas. The capstone moment leading to the Civil War was John Brown's raid on Harper's Ferry, Virginia in 1859. John Brown was a passionate abolitionist. He believed that he was God's agent on earth to end slavery. And in 1859, he raids only one of 2 federal military installations, armories, at Harper's Ferry, Virginia. He wants to start a slave rebellion, but it really doesn't get off the ground. And a young lieutenant colonel in the Union Army by the name of Robert E. Lee, along with just a handful of Marines, will capture John Brown and several of his sons and put the rebellion down. John Brown is tried for treason by the state of Virginia, and he goes to be hanged. And the last thing he says before he dies is, "I am now quite sure that the crimes of this nation shall not be purged except by blood." Particularly South Carolina had said that if Lincoln was elected president in 1860, knowing as a Republican that Republicans wanted to stop the expansion of slavery west, South Carolina and several other states vowed to secede from the Union if Lincoln was elected. In the 1860 election, even though he's not on the ballot in the South, Abraham Lincoln wins the presidency of the United States. And yes, it's true, he has to be snuck in to Washington, D.C. for his inauguration. There was this rumor that he was dressed as a woman, and that was always a kind of a rumor that was, you know, there to try to discredit somebody's character. Obviously, the rumor was not true. But as Lincoln takes office, South Carolina is making plans to secede, and they will do so in December of 1860. Lincoln's election really shook up the land because a lot of Southern politicians in the federal government will be leaving as their state secedes. And Jefferson Davis, former Secretary of War during the Mexican War, will leave when Mississippi secedes from the Union. And then as he's working in his rose garden with his wife Verena one day, he gets a telegram, and the telegram simply states that he has been elected President of the Confederacy. So imagine a time in America when you had basically 2 countries. You had a Confederacy, the presidency, the president was Jefferson Davis, and you had a Union, which was Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln's main goal, okay, as the Civil War breaks out, is to preserve the Union. You want to remember that, okay? Abraham Lincoln's main goal, all right, as the Civil War breaks out, is to preserve the Union, okay? You know, the Union Army had great strengths going into the war. They had better railroads. They had better factories. They had more factories. They had, you know, more men, more population, a lot of immigrant population in the North that could be quickly signed up for the Army. And yes, it's true, there are some units in the Federal Army that did not speak English. They were immigrant men that signed up for the war. Why would you do that? Why would you sign up for the war? You could be drafted, or you could simply sign up to get a new rifle or a new set of clothes. You know what the South had as an advantage was better leaders early. You know, the Union had a navy. The South doesn't have much of a navy. They'll have to work with the British government early on to have some military ships constructed for them. You know, the strategy for the Confederacy was not to lose the home front, not to lose the home soil, and also, when they could, to take the war to the enemy up north. The Union strategy was something called the Anaconda Plan. And the Anaconda Plan, think about what an anaconda does. It squeezes its prey. And the Anaconda Plan was a plan developed by Winfield Scott. And the plan was to squeeze the South of its resources, get to the railroads, break up the railroad track, get to the Mississippi River, break off the Mississippi River from the South, do a Union blockade of all major Southern ports like Wilmington, North Carolina. And the Anaconda Plan will prove very successful through the course of the war. You know, a lot of people still do not like Abraham Lincoln today because as a war president, he did things like suspending the writ of habeas corpus. And the writ of habeas corpus said, hey, you had to be told why you're being arrested. But remember that Washington, D.C. is a southern city. And so to protect the city and the federal government, Lincoln is going to cancel or suspend the writ of habeas corpus. Also, by September of 1862, Abraham Lincoln realizes that he must deal with the issue of the slaves. A young African-American man, an escaped slave himself, Frederick Douglass, is going to push Abraham Lincoln to let slaves, let free people, black people in the North, fight in their war. And finally, Lincoln is to the point where he realizes that he can't really win the war without dealing with the problem of slavery. So in September of 1862, he talks to his cabinet, and he talks to them about the Emancipation Proclamation that he's drafted. And it's going to free all the slaves behind Confederate lines. It's going to be a war measure to keep France and England out of the war. Because France and England are not going to fight a war about slavery after they've already abolished slavery in their country. So this was a political move. Okay, even though Abraham Lincoln is called the Great Emancipator, and he certainly went a long way to helping that process along, but this was a war measure. And the Emancipation Proclamation will take effect after the Battle of Antietam, which is fought in September of 1862. And the Battle of Antietam is the single bloodiest day in American history. 23,000 men killed and wounded. Clara Barton, who you might remember from American Red Cross fame, is literally on the battlefield that day. September 17th, I believe, 1862. She has bullets shot through her skirt. And, of course, she becomes one of the most famous nurses of the war, along with a man of American literature, a guy by the name of Walt Whitman. One of the most famous units in the war, particularly later in the war, that Frederick Douglass helped to organize is the 54th Massachusetts Regiment. And we'll be talking in class, probably show you the most famous monument in American Civil War history. And we'll be chatting a little bit about that. In our next session, which will be coming up very shortly, we're going to examine the battles of the war and take the war to a conclusion. But in this session, we reviewed the causes of the Civil War, and we talked a little bit about the cultural and monetary impacts of the war, as well as some of the advantages for both of the armies. Thank you very much.